morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Hardline. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We broadcast worldwide every Tuesday and Thursday on the Time for Hemp Broadcasting Network on iHeartRadio. Go to hardlineradio.com for showtimes and news about current events, as well as upcoming guests. I am very happy to be speaking today with Max Egan. His website is crowhouse.com. We will be discussing various things that are happening in the news. I have some tremendous articles that I've been writing lately, Max. And welcome to the broadcast, Max. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here, Susan. Thanks for asking me on.
I am a very big fan of yours. I respect your work tremendously. Give the listeners the YouTube channel /or/.
Well, the YouTube channel, the new YouTube channel is just called The Crow House. I've got an old one called AOD Scarecrow, but that's just sitting there as an archive now. But the new active channel that I upload to is called The Crow House.
Okay. So.
And my website again is thecrowhouse.com as well. You can access all of it from there. You'll see a link there that says YouTube channel, Facebook page. It's all there on The Crow House.
And I recommend everyone go there. I go there periodically throughout the week just to listen to your broadcasts and see what you're posting and what you're talking about. So I wanted to bring up something about Syria that I saw probably at the end of last week, and I wrote an article about it. And then I saw over the weekend more news about Syria, and so I wrote a second article about it. Because we were, you know, President Obama wanted to bomb because they were using chemical weapons. Like, the U.S. hasn't used chemical weapons on people before. Like, it wasn't the same sarin gas that we sold to Saddam Hussein that happened to end up in Libya and happened to end up in Syria. But as soon as all of that ends, all of a sudden, after a 14-year moratorium, polio shows up in Syria. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, Syria is a huge program to destabilize the area. It's on the hit list. It's been on the hit list. All the countries that have fallen, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, they want to go into Iran. It's all on the hit list. So these countries, none of these countries are a threat to the United States. None of them are a threat to the West. And it's a huge destabilizing program that's underway in that whole area. And the chemical weapons, I mean, this was a joke. I mean, it would appear that the chemical weapons were the rebels anyway, and it was just an accident. It was an explosion that happened in a tunnel. I mean, and it's probably British weapons or, you know, I mean, that's why they didn't want to really go in and look at it, because it would have been come from the West anyway. Apparently it was smuggled in through Saudi Arabia, which is another Western ally, which is one of the most oppressive regimes in the whole area, incidentally, and we don't seem to be doing anything about that. You know, so yeah, it's a scam. The whole thing's a scam, but polio, I mean, that's interesting that we would see a resurgence of polio. I mean, this has been eradicated long ago. And if polio has reared its ugly head in Syria, well, I would suggest that it's been put there by somebody.
I would agree. The first article that I wrote about it was just exposing the fact that it hadn't been there since 1999, 14 years. And then all of a sudden it resurges in this eastern part of Syria. And the World Health Organization goes nuts. Oh, my God, we have to start this global initiative starting in Syria to vaccinate every single child. They want to vaccinate. The EU has committed 13.5 million euros to the World Health Organization to pay for this. And they want to vaccinate every single child in Syria. And Syria right now is saying, no, we don't want this. Absolutely not. Do not come in here and do this. But then when I was looking up polio and trying to explain to people how dangerous this is, I stumbled across the CDC website that talks about how polio is confirmed from originating from the oral polio vaccine. So that right there. Whether or not there's actually polio in Syria, they're absolutely going to come down with it, just like the kids in Pakistan did, the 10,000 children who died from Gavi and Bill Gates when they went in there and gave them polio vaccines.
Well, you know, all of these vaccines, this is hideous, what they're doing to children. These destroy children's immune system. That's what it's all about. Any excuse they can have to go in there and upset the genetic order of the place. I mean, look what they've done in Iraq and or this area just with depleted uranium, what that's done to the genetic order in Iraq. You know, and they're having a hard time in Syria getting in there. They're having a hard time getting Western support for what they're doing. They want to go in and decimate this population. They need to find a way to do it. What better way than the humanitarian way? We want to go in there to save the children from polio. We need to do this. It's the most humanitarian thing we do. If the Assad government won't let us do it, well, look at what they care. They don't care about their children at all, do they? You know, the mothers of the world and the TV drones will think that this is a great thing and the West is out there to save the world again. That's what it's all about. They just disguise it, give it a different package, and they go in there to decimate the population, to destroy the genetic code of the population, and they do it every way they can. That's what it's all about. That's what vaccinations are all about everywhere. I've got friends who don't vaccinate their children, and these kids are so many streets ahead of other children their same age in their dialogue. And I've got a two-year-old girl who's got an incredible vocabulary, and the other two-year-olds around her who've all been vaccinated are all pretty slow in that regard. You know, so these things do a great deal of damage to the genetic code of everybody who gets vaccinated, and we need to pay attention to how they play their games, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I noticed that with my children. When I stopped vaccinating and got rid of the fluoride and stopped eating processed foods, their behavior was dramatically different.
Oh, it does. It all changes. Everything changes. All these foods. So this is what they do. They marginalize the population. They enslave everybody to an economic model, and they have to go to the cheap supermarket, which is all GM and all stuff that's full of stuff to, you know, keep you dumbed down and keep your brain lulled into this, you know, dream state, which is what fluoride does as well. And it makes a huge difference when you change your diet. Diet's responsible for 90% of the problems that we face as far as not being aware of the control grid. Why you can't wake people up is because of what they consume. And even if they consume good foods, very often they're bathing in fluoridated water. And your body is your biggest organ. Your skin is your biggest organ. You're absorbing a lot of water through your skin. So it just goes on. There's a huge mechanism in place to keep people in the state that they're in.
Oh, absolutely. I did an article recently about DDT. It's the Washington State University did a study where they injected rats with DDT that were pregnant. The rats that the offspring from those rats developed issues with obesity, up into the great great grandchildren who were born never having been exposed to DDT, were also becoming obese.
Yeah, well, they do this with all sorts of stuff. Like with GM food, the experiments that they've done with animals and GM food with rats and other animals is that it's caused organ damage and especially damage to genitalia. So that within three generations, rats that consume GM corn, for example, are all rendered sterile and have genetic disorders. And this is what we're going to see with the human race as well. Over three generations, people will be rendered sterile. There's Agenda 21. There's your depopulation program. So the depopulation program and Agenda 21, it's all going on right now around everybody's right under their noses, but everybody's waiting for this big event. They're waiting for everyone, you know, martial law to be declared and everyone marched into FEMA camps or World War III to break out or, you know, a comet to come and hit or a global financial crash. Everyone's waiting for this big event. They're not paying attention to what's going on around them. The earth is being depopulated right under their noses. Through the commercial system, through imposed poverty on people, imposing poverty on people, making people homeless, thereby incarcerating them in the legal system, in the jail systems. They're filling up the jails this way, raising the price of everything so that more and more people get discarded by the economic model. That's how they do it. And also with the genetic model, through GM food, over a series of generations, there'll be certain people that simply can't breed. And they push people out of the country and into cities by polluting the groundwater in the country through coal seam gas mining. That's what that's all about. I mean, we don't need gas. We don't need to harvest this stuff to meet our energy needs. Nikola Tesla wanted to give the world free energy back in the turn of the last century, for God's sake. I mean, we could have other ways of doing things. We don't need to harvest gas to meet our energy needs, especially when it's destroying groundwater. That's the one guaranteed result of coal seam gas mining, is the destruction of groundwater. So obviously, when you consider we don't need this stuff really, then that is the purpose of it. It's to drive people out of the country and into the city, pollute all the groundwater, give this whole sustainable development model, you know, a hold. That's what they want to do. That's what it's all about. And people need to pay attention to what's going on around them, because there is a really, really uncomfortable undercurrent to this reality if people would pay attention to it. Stop looking at all of the big things on the surface that they're being used to distract people with, you know, like waiting for a cataclysm, waiting for all these things to happen. Start paying attention to what's going on around you. Look at what you're eating. Look at what is in the environment around you and what they are gradually doing, because that's what it is. It's a gradual process, and it's going on behind the scenes while people are being misdirected and looking elsewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Going to the natural gas you were discussing, when I saw all of this going on with natural gas and Israel discovering that they have the Leviathan Basin that is hooked up right against the area in the Mediterranean where Cyprus has their natural gas that they haven't developed yet, that they are now because they have signed a contract with the Israeli government and Noble Energy, as well as Greece, the two countries that were technocratically just decimated just recently. They just happened to sell over all of their natural resources. But also, we've been fracking the hell out of this country. In tremendous ways. There's huge, gigantic pockets of the country. I was looking at a map where it was blue and red, and they showed in red where they've been fracking, and it's just right down the center of the country. It's amazing how much fracking they've been doing. But it makes sense when you think about what the technocrats are doing, because on the global market, energy is now being shifted toward natural gas. The United Nations in November, we're talking about making natural gas a mandate globally, and taking admonishing the governments that are giving oil corporations subsidies. So now, all of a sudden, the U.S. dollar and OPEC and all the hold that the Middle Eastern countries have over the world with their petrol is now being threatened by the shale gas and the natural gas that we're importing and exporting at tremendous rates.
Yeah, well, it's all about, you know, supporting this economic model. See, the economic model, the system of commerce, this is how they do it. This is how they control people. This is all to do with Agenda 21. It's all to do with securing all of the world's resources, but pushing the world into a certain direction. They want to create a certain model of how reality works on this planet, and they do it by commerce. They do it by shifting the wealth to certain areas, marginalizing different areas, and controlling the people that way. They'll use they'll support natural gas this way in order to destroy all of the people that have got stakes in the petrodollar, and they can use it to destroy the water table as well. Then they'll probably go back to the petrodollar. They'll probably go back to using oil, because there's other ways of doing things. We don't need to be harvesting this gas. And obviously, I mean, there isn't enough gas in the earth to support our energy needs indefinitely. There just isn't. You know, they'll cap the wells for a while. They'll use this to destroy that system, to take out those corporations and consolidate the whole thing into the global corporate system. And then they'll shift it back. They'll shift it wherever they want. See, that's the thing. You know, you've got a system which is controlled via the issuance of currency. The money is the glue that holds the whole thing together. And it isn't that money has value. It's that money has perceived value. You know, our natural state on this planet is abundance, but they superimpose a system of commerce over our minds so that we're not able to live in abundance. We have to be enslaved to this money system. Now, you get a tribal culture, they live in a state of abundance. You come along and you start trading paper and metal with them, and suddenly they can't have any of the abundance around them without trading the paper and metal. So it disconnects them from everything that they've got. So that's how they do it. And they use this to depopulate the planet, and they use it to marginalize and control certain areas. So if you're the one who issues the currency, then you're above all of that system. It doesn't affect you. But if everybody who operates within that system is forced to use this paper or metal in order to trade with each other, then you can control the value of that and where that paper and metal goes. And you might be a rich mining magnate and think, you know, I'm control of all of these minds and I control all of these interests and I'm all good. Nothing will ever touch me. But if you don't issue the currency, all they can do, all they have to do is take the attention and put it somewhere else. Take the attention that you're getting for your industry and put it into another industry, and suddenly your industry will be worth nothing, and then they will get it and you will be discarded. That's the way it works. It's a corporatocracy, what we have on this planet. All of our governments are corporations. All of the businesses are corporations. The new world order that's been created is a global corporation. And people think we're headed for corporatocracy, but we're not. We're actually in it already. And the new world order that everybody fears is simply a consolidation of these corporations into one huge conglomerate, which is run by those who issue the currency. And currency is fiction. Now, paper is just paper that we pass around to each other. And it's a program. It's a very difficult program for people to break. You talk to a tribal culture and they can't understand the concept of having to pay for things. But once you introduce them to the concept of paying for things, then they can't understand how life could work without it. It's a very, very interesting program, how it affects the human psyche. But the system of commerce is ultimately responsible for this whole mess that we're in. That's the glue, the catalyst that holds it all together. And when you see how they shift the money around between these corporations and shift the wealth around the planet, essentially, to different corporations in different countries, and they marginalize others, and this is how they gain control of all of the resources. See, they can't own the earth until they trick someone else into believing that they can own it. Once they've tricked everybody into believing that you can own part of the earth, then they can enslave you to a money system designed to implode, and eventually what you believe you own will go into their hands and you'll believe that they own it. But ultimately nobody can own the earth. The earth is the earth, and we have no right to exploit it the way we do, and the only reason we do is because of this commercial system. That's what it's for. That's how it works. It's a very clever system.
Absolutely. When the settlers came over here and spoke to the Native Americans, they had no word for ownership of the earth. They didn't understand that. And we're going to head up on a break here soon in about 20 seconds. But that idea was foreign, and the concept just made no sense to them. How can you purchase land? How can you own the earth? It belongs to everyone. But let's continue this on the other side. Folks, you're listening to Hardline with Suzanne Posel, and I am speaking with Max Egan. Crowhouse.com is his website. Don't go away. You are listening to Hardline with Suzanne Posel. I am speaking with Max Egan. His website is crowhouse.com. And please go there and check out everything that this man is doing. He's absolutely brilliant. Before we went on the break, we were discussing the monetary system. And just recently, China state-funded media came out and suggested that we have an international reserve currency to replace the global reserve currency in the U.S. dollar. And that currency be under the control of the UN. And so, you know, people come to me all the time and ask me about one world currency. When is it going to happen? It's happening right now. If there's an international reserve currency on the global market for the global economy, then each respective quote-unquote sovereign nation could keep their fiat, because it would still be balanced out against the international reserve currency. So it's having that one world currency and yet still keeping the illusion that there's a yuan and there's a ruble and there's a U.S. dollar and so on and so forth.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be what they would want to do. That would be the only one that people would accept. And I think a lot of people probably would accept that. It's the problem is currency itself. I mean, we don't need this stuff. But like I said, it's a very difficult program to break. But the reason they would be doing that is because, I mean, the United States is broke. The United States is gone. The debt of the United States far exceeds the net worth of everybody and everything and every mineral and every resource in the country that it could ever produce. If you melted the whole country down and turned it into bars of whatever it created, even if you sold off all the people as slaves, there is not enough value inside the United States to ever cover its debt. So they need to foreclose on that corporation. The easiest way to do that is to create a global reserve currency, so the United States dollar isn't the global reserve currency, because That's the only thing that's holding the United States together. And that's why it keeps waging all these wars as well, because it needs to generate spending, because that's the only way it can survive. And most of the country, I would suggest, is run on drug money that comes in from Afghanistan. That's why they moved operations from Cuba to Afghanistan, or from Contra and the whole Contra rebels scandal and all that sort of stuff that happened that George H.W. Bush appeared to be involved in, you know, where they were doing the huge cocaine operations out of South America. When that all fell through, they moved it to Afghanistan, and then the Taliban basically started to pull the pin on that and close all the opium fields, which is why they needed to go into Afghanistan so quickly. And now the Golden Triangle in Afghanistan is producing records amounts of heroin now that England, America, Australia, the coalition of the willing, which I would say is the coalition of the criminally insane, actually is now in control of Afghanistan. Now it's producing record amounts of heroin. And this is what is basically used to float the U.S. economy, to keep money floating around inside the country. And what keeps America functioning really on the global market is the amount of spending it does on war and the amount of weapons it sells. I mean, every state in America has something, some factory in that state that makes some part for some military equipment. I mean, they've spread it out across the whole country. So as much as the people don't want war, they want jobs because they need jobs because they're enslaved to this economic model. And their job may be making some ball bearing or some part or some piece of metal or some this or some that. And they don't really know what it is, but it's part of a military device. And this is the way the American economy has been run. So, you know, there's not much hope for it. And the only way they can really foreclose it any way that it will be effective is to bring in this global reserve currency. Look at Evelyn Rothschild. He said that we can expect a global currency within 5 years. And all of the governments want to do this, and they will. They'll do it, and people will let them do it because they won't have a choice. It'll just go that way. What are we going to do about it? We can say we don't want it as much as we want, but if our government just says we've thought that it's the best thing to do, we've looked at it, and yes, we're sorry, but we really believe this is what we have to do, and they'll just be looking at you saying, so this is what we're doing, and that's it. And if you don't like it, well, that's sad. You won't have any money to spend. So you can bring in your money and you can trade it for this global currency, which, of course, anybody who's got stashes of gold or silver or any money buried out in the backyard, they'll have to declare all this now. The government will want to tax it all. And it's a way of tidying up the whole corporate system. And what people have to understand is that money is fiction. We don't need it at all. And no, I'm not a socialist or anything for saying that. I can just see the world a lot clearer than what, you know, they can, I suppose. I don't know. I don't mean to be insulting, but I mean, we don't need it. We really don't need this stuff. Money is designed to provide scarcity. That's its only purpose. It's the glue that holds the corporate system together, and it's a program. What I'd like to see is I'd like to see people regain their power and rein this government in to the point that it becomes very, very small. We put them back in the position of servants where they're supposed to be, and eventually move ourselves back to our own state of abundance that we should be in, where we can express our own creativity, you know, like lead humankind full circle back to where we should be. That's what I hope to start doing next year. I want to launch a project called the Full Circle Project, and that's what it's kind of aimed at. But, you know, the problem isn't really a global currency. It's money itself. I mean, if we're going to trade globally the way we do, and let's face it, the system's been constructed that way. It's been constructed so the industries have been moved around so that all of the countries are now interdependent on each other. Now, we'll grow apples in Australia, and we'll ship our apples to Germany, and we'll buy apples from New Zealand just to keep the trade system going. It's completely ridiculous. It costs money to do it, ship it all around, but it's all about the economic model, isn't it? So we need to do this. It makes sense to do this. We'll get our industries where we make cars or automobiles or factory equipment or whatever. We'll move it offshore. We'll buy it from Germany or Spain or somebody else so that now we are interdependent. So that's what this whole free trade thing's been about. It's about making all the countries interdependent on each other so that now if we stop trading with each other, we won't be able to put food on the table. There won't be cars on the street. There won't be equipment we need, just everyday things that we use. We won't be able to get these things. So we're all interdependent. So now they can just basically put whatever money system they want in place, and complain as we will, they'll do it. And there won't be much we can really do about it, you know?
No, absolutely. The Federal Reserve recently came out and warned all of the mega banks in the United States to reserve cash on hand, government bonds, highly rated assets, in case of an economic downturn. They want to make sure that they have as much liquidity as possible, meeting the requirements of the Basel III Accord that happened just in the latter part of last year. So the Bank of International Settlements came out and told all the central banks that they had to liquidate their assets by 2019. And now we're seeing the fruition of that order being disseminated down through the ranks of the central banks into the J.P. Morgan Chase and the Bank of America's and all that. They have to keep more than $250 billion in assets on their books. They have to hold those cash reserves for funding banking operations for a 30-day severe market stress. If it's a smaller bank, it would have to keep $50 million expected to maintain in-house accounting for 21 days. So they're obviously preparing for the destruction, continued destruction, or, you know, the decimation of the complete worth of the U.S. dollar, which is like 3 cents now, I think. It's not much.
Yeah. Well, it has to go. I mean, it absolutely has to go because it's exceeded its net worth. The only thing that's keeping the United States going is war and drugs. Like I said, that's the only thing it's floating on at the moment. And, you know, the world can't keep sustaining it if it's going to support this economic model. And that's what it's all about. And it's all about the consolidation of corporations. America has done what it was supposed to do. It's created this whole global police state that has been working. It's created this global military. All of that machinery can now be sold off to the UN. A UN army can be created out of the remnants and the tatters of the United States. The United States can be used to develop weapons, and they'll turn the rest of it into a theme park. That's basically what they'll do with the United States. It'll become a military factory and Disneyland. That's what it's headed for. You'll be able to get a job there. Yeah, you'll be able to get a job there in a factory or working in the hospitality industry, and they'll want tourists to come there and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's where the United States is heading. And it can't survive as a corporate entity. And when we realize that that's what this system is, well, that's when we can find the remedy. Because within the system, I mean, what we've got is basically a bunch of big department stores. That's your countries. They're all just department stores. And you're the goods and chattels within that department store. That's what your birth certificate's all about. That's why it's a certificate, of ownership. The name they give you, that's not your name. That's a name they give you. That's the name of that product, of that chattel. And they tax that chattel. They traded with that chattel. They trade your ownership of you on the market. This is the way it all works. It's a whole corporate system. And what we have to realize is that it's there, and we can step above it. We absolutely can, because it's fiction. The whole thing only exists on paper. The whole world's been trashed, and all the environmental damage that we're facing, it's all as a result of this corporate model. Every problem that we face is a result of this corporate model. It's a result of commerce being superimposed over the mind of man. That's the basis of all of our problems. And all of this commerce, all of this corporate rape of our planet that occurs, happens because of legislation put in place by government. Government is able to do that because we've forgotten where we sit in the social hierarchy. We've forgotten that these people are our servants. This is what I've been talking about for so long on the show, Suzanne, is that, you know, it all ultimately comes down to us reclaiming our power, us changing our perspective of what reality is. You know, they say if you change the inner world, you can change the outer world, and you can, as long as you're prepared to apply yourself to the outer world and exercise the power that you have. Now, we've got to step above this corporate system. We can't allow it to keep going because it's destroying our habitat. And we will not survive this corporate system. We won't survive ourselves if we don't rein this system in. And it's important for people to pay attention to what it is. Now, the only reason you're enslaved to an economic model, the only reason you have to pay to be alive, the only reason you've got to run so fast on the treadmill to keep your head above water is because of this system of commerce that's been superimposed over your mind. It's people farming. It's human trafficking. It's harvesting your energy, the resources of your life. All your energy is spent running on the treadmill, collecting paper, doing things that you think are important, but they're not. You know, what is important is your experience here, your time here, the art of your life. And we're never free to live that and express that, because we're caught up in this corporate system. And people just have to see it. They have to see where it's going. Now, you can't have permanent economic growth on a planet with finite resources. We'll just keep going until we destroy the Earth. We'll keep going. The people that run the planet, they're so locked into it. They'll keep going until they've destroyed the planet, turned the Earth into what looks like the moon, and then they'll say we need to go find a new race to exploit somewhere in the universe because I still owe money to the bank. You know?
That's probably exactly what they'll do. We're going to...
They do. They're psychopaths. They just can't think the way normal people do, and they're locked into this model, this economic model. And like I said, if you're the one who introduces the currency and issues the paper, and everyone thinks this paper has value, then that's it. You're outside of the system. You can just sit there and puppet reality. You can puppet the human race. You can marginalize different countries. It's like a big chessboard to you. It's like a train set. You're just up there, let's crash a bridge over here, and let's create a fire over here, and let's do that, and let's do that. Oh, drought, shortage, starvation. Oh, let's have a war. You know, it's just like a big chessboard to these people. They don't care. They don't care about anybody else. They don't care about the people. They live outside of the system. And all of the system, all of the people within the system think the system is real, and they're running around like ants in an ant farm. They're running around like mice on a treadmill, thinking they're doing all this stuff that means something. But it doesn't. They're all chasing this fictional goal, this paper-based reality, this economic model, which is completely fictional, which is designed to separate you from reality, to separate you from the abundance that exists all around you, and to separate you from the art of your own life. That's what people need to realize. You know, we could step above it all very, very quickly, Suzanne. We really could if we just realized it was there and we respected each other. That's the key, respect.
Absolutely. We're going to head off to a break here, and let's continue this on the other side. Folks, you're listening to Hardline with Suzanne Posel, and my guest is Max Egan, crowhouse.com. We will be right back. Everyone, welcome back to Hardline. I'm Suzanne Posel, and I'm speaking with Max Egan. His website is crowhouse.com. Before we went on the break, we were discussing the fiction of currency and how we have been taught to base, you know, the American dream, right? You know, the big house with the garage and the white picket fence and the wife and the two kids and the dog. And if you don't have that, you're nothing. And all these gadgets, you know, why cook when you have all these gadgets and this desire culture that they created. But I saw recently, and I wrote about this, AP put out a study saying that because people are not purchasing for desire, they're purchasing for need, Americans alone have pulled $3.3 trillion out of the global economy. And that, to me, says something tremendous, that going with what you were saying before the break, by not complying with the system that has been created, we can shut it down and not wait for them to go ahead and demolish it. We can have a controlled demolition if we want.
Look, the problem is that we're kept separate from each other through this economic model. That's the thing. You know, we could step above the whole thing if we simply respected each other. That's the thing. You know, like, we created this system to service our needs, and it's basically gotten out of control. And government isn't real. People think government is this big entity. You know, it's a corporation. It's a corporation that exists in a book, and the people who operate the corporation believe they have a monopoly on reality, a monopoly on your social life, a monopoly on your whole world. And not only that, but they also have a monopoly on violence, and they will use violence against you if you step outside of their rules. But, you know, mankind created this system to service mankind's needs ultimately, and, you know, these people have simply gone into power. They just write more and more rules in these books and do whatever they want, and they say they can because it says so in the book. And they enforce all this with violence. Really, it's just in a book. It doesn't really exist. It's not real. It's just something people wrote down. That's all government actually is. You know, government is a big building, and people with expensive suits that we actually employ to manage our infrastructure for us go into this building and they do what it says in the book. And if they need to extract more wealth from us, which is all they're doing these days, is extracting the wealth of the country, extracting the wealth of each person within the country to their own hands and passing it to their corporate masters. If they haven't got a way of doing it and they go in there and think up a new way of extracting more wealth from you, they just write it down in the book. And then they come out and they say, look, this is a new law. So now we can fine someone for doing this and for doing that and for doing something else. And they make more and more laws. They make it illegal for you to step outside of their lines. They make it illegal for you to walk on the grass. You can't camp here. You can't have a barbecue here. You can't have a picnic here. You can't use this on the beach. You can't walk your dog on the beach. You've got to have both hands on the wheel when you're driving. You can't carry your children on your shoulders. You can't put your dustbin out on the night that it isn't due to be picked up. You'll get fined if you do. All these things will institute fines. If you do any of these things, we're going to take money from you. Commerce is the glue that holds it all together. We're going to put you in a system of scarcity, and we're going to make every single human activity that you do, we're going to regulate it. So that if you step outside of our lines and you act like a normal functioning human being, you've broken the law. We'll make it possible for everybody to break the law at any time of the day, day or night, so that we can enslave everybody to this corporate model. We can introduce a system of total criminalization so that everybody is uniform in the eyes of the law. We will homogenize the population. We'll limit all new ideas. You don't have a new idea. Don't be creative unless it's something that we can approve of and we can learn how to regulate and we can tax. If it's an idea that you have which will eventually lead to more wealth for us or another way for us to extract wealth from you, then that's what we'll do. That's what our government system is, and it's fiction. It's been created by public servants that we elect to manage our infrastructure for us. We employ these people as servants, and they're stealing from us. That's what they're doing. You know, if you had a mansion, if you had a big house, and you had a group of servants you'd employed, and suddenly these servants started telling you which rooms you could go in, which side of the door you had to use, which entrances you could use, which side of the driveway you could drive on, where you could park your car, and started implementing rules in your house and then stealing from you every time you broke one of their rules. And then while they were doing that, they started selling off all the silverware and selling off all the furniture and having wild parties in your house and trashing the garden and selling off bits of your land, you would soon sack these servants. And that's what we've got on a national scale with our governments. We've got servants that have taken over the mansion and they're stealing everything from us. They're stealing the silverware, they're trashing the garden, and they're doing it because we're not paying attention. They've trained us to compete with each other in every possible way that they can. Social competition, racial competition, intellectual competition, anything. Even with this conspiracy movement, the alternative research movement, whatever you want to call it, intellectual competition between the people in the movement. Everything they can do to divide and conquer. Anything they can do to undermine anything, any movement of unity that is born or grows. Anytime people get together, they want change, they co-opt it, they undermine it, they do everything they can to keep the people divided. And I believe the remedy to the whole thing is for people to realize that it's all got to come down to an individual thing. There are no leaders. This is simply an idea whose time has come. It's a change in paradigm, a change in perspective. That has to be based on respect. We have to realize everything that I just said. That's what this system is. And we have to realize that it's all designed to keep us divided. So there's the remedy right there. The remedy is unity. The remedy is for us to realize who and what we are and to respect each other. You know, if we did that, I finish every radio show with Imla Kesh, which means I am another yourself. If we actually treated people that way, we could change the world in one day. We quite literally could. It's very difficult. You get drawn into arguments, you get drawn into confrontations with people, especially now. It's like the energy's changing. The last year has been very, very difficult for a lot of people, including me. So it's very, very interesting. There's a lot of things going on to try to keep us in this state, but the remedy really is very simple. The remedy is respect. That's how we can, you know, free ourselves, emancipate ourselves from this entire system is through respect. Non-compliance to the fiction and respect. Non-compliance to anything that interferes with your moral compass. That's the thing. If there's legislation that's put in place which interferes with your moral compass, then you have a moral obligation to disobey that legislation, to question that legislation, to follow it through, find out who enacted it, to hold them in breach of trust because they're your employee. All these politicians are our employees. If they're enacting legislation which places us in a state of hardship, which steals from us and which causes us to go against our moral compass, then that legislation should be ignored by default. But, you know, you do this on your own, you get in trouble, which is why we need a united community, which is why we need to learn to respect each other. And we need to learn to respect ourselves as well. Stop judging ourselves to the parameters that are given to us and simply get on with the art of our life, because that's what we're here to do. You know, it's not about all this stuff. It's not about what you do. It's about who you are. You even say to people, you know, who are you? They go, oh, I'm a plumber, I'm a baker, I'm a carpenter. And that's what you do. Who are you? Who are you? What is your art? What are you here for? What is your expression of creation, you know? We've been led away from all of that, and I think there's a real need to get it back. That's what I want to do with the film. I'm going to make a film next year about the Earth and hopefully help people wake up to this sort of view of things, help people rediscover themselves. I mean, that's been the purpose of the show ever since the beginning on Surviving the Matrix. That's what I've been attempting to do, is to help people rediscover themselves. I think that's the key to the whole thing, Suzanne. I really do.
Oh, I agree with you. I wrote an article recently about crowd psychology because I saw that this phenomenon has overtaken, especially in alternative media circles. The ideas that were put forth by Gustave Le Bon about how the crowd will give the individual a sense of anonymity, and that they lose their sense of individuality and personal responsibility, that they, when they are under this spell, they will follow the crowd unquestioningly toward a directed set of goals, and it doesn't matter what it is. Somebody in the crowd decides to throw a Molotov cocktail. All of a sudden, there's a riot in the streets, and people are breaking in storefronts and bashing in cars and, you know, dragging people out and beating them in the street. These are people who are not violent. These are people who are not innately mean or rude or would ever do that under any other circumstance. But when you take that idea and you bring it to a smaller scale, we're all part of these groups, and we're going to head off to a break soon in about 30 seconds. But I don't want to get your thoughts on the other side of the break. We're all part of these groups on Facebook and in social media and in our life and in our churches and the cliques that we belong to at work or in school. And we don't think about how we don't think on our own anymore once we are part of these groups. We no longer have our individual mindset to say, I'm not going to participate in this. This goes against what I personally believe, because we want to be liked. We want to go with the crowd, with the Ash conformity study that has been replicated several times and always follows the same, that people will give wrong answers even though they know that they're wrong, just to be part of the crowd, that they will not want to be right. They want to be loved and they want to be accepted. And that idea, that innate mindset that we have, is then used against us to force us to comply with a system that completely breaks every part of our individuality, so that if we were to break free from the crowd, we wouldn't know where to begin. Who are we? What do we like? What's our favorite food? What color do we like? What kind of movies do we like? We're heading on to a break here, so I want to get your thoughts on the other side. Folks are listening to Hardline, and we are speaking to Max Egan. Crowhouse.com is his website. Don't go away.
You don't need no friends. Get back your faith again. You have the power to believe. Another dissident, take back your evidence. It has no power to deceive.
I believe it when I see it for myself.
Welcome back, folks. We are speaking with Max Egan. His website is thecrowhouse.com. I apologize. I was giving out the wrong wrong web address. I'm sorry. Before we went on break, I was talking to you about crowd psychology. And what is your understanding with what we're talking about, with the spell that everyone's under and the conformity that we all kind of fall in line to?
Well, it's really interesting. Peer group pressure is a really, really interesting thing. And what you were talking about with crowd mentality and mob mentality, how, you know, a peaceful crowd can suddenly turn into a mob is a very, very interesting trait of humankind. I mean, we're really the only species that would do anything like this. It's very, very bizarre how this will happen. And the terrible atrocities that are carried out in war, and there's this energetic exchange that goes on once you start feeding on the energy field around you. Because if you think about how reality works, you know, your heart is an electromagnetic generator. It's constantly communicating with the field around you all the time. And the field is talking back to you. You're literally downloading electromagnetic frequencies and energy into you all the time. So if you're in a crowd and people are generating this energy, you just start downloading it into yourself. And suddenly you become part of this huge hive mind. It's very, very bizarre. I mean, I can only speculate on why it happens, but I would believe it would have to be because of the electromagnetic exchange that happens between the people. I've done a movie I did back in 2008 or 2009 called The Awakening, where I spoke about this, how your heart is literally an electromagnetic generator. Your heart's communicating to the energy field around you all the time. You know, you have thoughts, you imbue these thoughts with emotion, and your fear or your love or your state of well-being is projected to the reality around you, and reality will mirror that back to you. This is what they hijacked with the law of attraction. People started discovering the law of mirroring, how reality will literally mirror their heart space back to them, and they said, oh, gee, people are finding out how to manipulate the energy. We better get them back into commerce. So it became the law of attraction. Now you can think of prosperity. You know, prosperity is, you know, is a synthetic reality which is used to replace abundance. Abundance is a natural state. Prosperity is a synthetic reality based on commerce. This is how they do it. They superimpose one reality over the other. And I think in these crowd mentalities, in these mob mentalities that happen, I think it's simply an energetic exchange. And, of course, there are usually avant provocateurs in there that will start whipping up the crowd. And also, when you think about humankind, you think about what our society is. People are so limited in what they can do. You've got human expression, which is unlimited creative potential. I mean, every human being has unlimited creative potential, limited only by their belief of what they can and can't create. Ultimately, that's the whole thing. I mean, this whole world is a product of our imagination. You know, everything we've created is a product of our imagination. Everything that man ever made, any mark that man has ever left on the world has been a product of our imagination. We have to imagine it before we did it. The chair I'm sitting on, someone had to imagine it before they built it. So, you know, we are absolutely unlimited. When you take that potential and you squash it into a box and you limit it and you fracture it and you divide it from itself and you keep it in a state where it is absolutely emotionally, spiritually, and mentally suppressed, then you give it little release valves here and there, like, you know, football games and adventure movies and action movies where you can come out feeling, you know, a bit relieved at the end of the movie because the good guy won. These are all release valves. But when you get, you know, society, ultimately, underlying all of that, there's a huge amount of oppression that exists in the human psyche. These little release valves are what are used to enable people to continue to go to work and continue to function within the parameters of this society. But when you put them in that crowd mentality and they're up against this system and they've really had enough and you get a few people in there starting to throw rocks, they just realize that this is all fiction. They get into that wave and they just want to pull the whole thing down and destroy it because they know probably in their hearts that that's what it needs. You know, so it's just a huge release that happens because people are so suppressed. And that's, you know, another reason why they can suppress people. And then they can create these whole mob scenes and put it all on the news. Oh, look, you know, look at this terrible situation. This is why we need more police. We need more laws. We need more control because this is what we're dealing with. This is what our streets are turning into. They've created the whole thing through suppressing human consciousness in this way. And, of course, those that are, you know, on their prescription drugs and drinking their beers every night and sitting there watching the telly and drinking their fluoridated water, they just see it all on the TV. And they think it's hell and danger outside, danger in the city. They don't go in there. They just stay home. And they get the reality that's fed to them on the television. They go do their little jobs in their factory the next day. They do everything they can to keep the machine going. And that's the people that the government wants. All the people that are out there protesting, these are all people who are half awake. So they want to turn it violent. They want to be able to oppress these people. They want to turn these people, get them into the total criminalization program so they can control them all, vilify them all. These are people that are speaking out against government. They're evil people. They must be bad because they want to make the world different to what it is now. And look how safe you are. You've got your TV, you've got your beers, you've got your stuff every night, you've got your steady job, you can go to the park on Sunday. We've got all these little recreational facilities that we've put there for you to keep your cage all ordered and happy. People like that, you know. So you can see why it happens and you can see why it's done and the need for them to do this, how it's used and why these situations are created, you know. And but very much you can see why that happened, because we really are so suppressed as a species, and it's no wonder that these situations happen. In fact, it's a wonder they don't happen more often.
It was amazing to me to look into crowd psychology and see the answer to why people are called sheeple, you know, why they refer to people as asleep or awake. It's just another, to me, another version of falling with the crowd. Okay, so I was asleep. Now I'm awake. Now I belong to this crowd. And this crowd has this beliefs. And so I'm going to fight for this. And some of the parts of the crowd have veered off and formed crowds, you know?
Like I said, you can only do this because society is so suppressed. That's the problem. Society is absolutely suppressed. And so they explode this way. And it's an energetic exchange. But, you know, if you can be empowered, if you could actually get the concept into people's minds of what they actually are, and that this is a fictional system, and that it's absolutely easy to escape the clutches of this system by simply remembering who and what you are and respecting the people around you. The power of community. I mean, there's billions of us. We can do anything we want to do. We can create any reality we want. You know, if you can create that energy with people, which is what I've attempted to do with a lot of the shows, I mean, if you can create that energy, that empowerment with people, then that energetic reality can ripple out and download into people as well. If you could create a huge wave, a huge march in the street, a huge revolution of people, of absolutely empowered people, then it couldn't turn into anything bad. You know, if anybody in the crowd lifted a rock or did anything, the rest of the crowd just jump on them and hand them over to the police, because they're probably a police officer off duty, you know, agent provocateur anyway. You know, like, we can deal with these situations, but I don't think it has to be done with a violent march in the street or anything like that. I think it can be done on an energetic level right from where people are. We could change the world without ever leaving our house. We really could, if we changed our perspective and changed how we interact with the people around us, put ourselves in this high-energy state, because it can ripple out. And when you think about it, just that whole crowd mentality, that mob mentality that happens, because that is an energetic download, this is a clear demonstration of the reality of the energetic universe, and the reality that the energetic state that you're in can rub off on the people around you. The problem is that it's easier for a violent mentality to rub off on people, because people are so suppressed. People are kept so disconnected from the art of themselves, and everybody within society, it's this fear dripping in the back of their minds. There's this frustration dripping. Life just isn't exactly the way they thought it should be. No matter how well off they are, life isn't what they thought it should be, because they are presented with this white picket fence 2.4 kid reality, and it just didn't work out that way. And even if they did get that, well, that's not happiness. That doesn't work. What is this all about? Now I've got all this. How come I'm not living, feeling like the Brady Bunch or whoever I'm supposed to feel like? What is it about? What was it all for? So people are kept in this false reality. They have this underlying frustration, which is why it's so easy for it to erupt into violence. It's much more difficult for you to get it to erupt into bliss and erupt into pleasure and erupt into empowerment, because people are kept in this state. I think a lot of it is the chemical problem as well. I think the fluoride and the toxins in the food also are done to prevent people from getting into these hygienic states. That's why the mobile phones and the wireless technology exists as well, I believe. You know, everything, we're energetic, and everything functions at very low bandwidths on this planet. It's all around 7.8 hertz, which is what the Schumann cavity resonance is, which is also what the human brain resonance is. It's all very, very low vibrational frequencies. And we've introduced all of this technology, which is bombarding entire reality around us with all this electromagnetic pollution, up in the millions of hertz ranges, you know, gigahertz and megahertz. I mean, ridiculous amounts of hertz, ridiculous frequencies that are all very damaging to the human organism and very disconnecting to the human organism. So it's difficult. It's difficult to get people to get into that energetic state. But I think becoming aware of it is 80% of the battle. Just becoming aware of what the problem is and not trying to address the symptoms, but addressing the actual problem. Because the problem, as I said and I say so often, is corruption of the system, which is there because of our disconnected state. So there's the problem. The problem is our disconnected communities. We have to unite as a community. We have to start to respect each other. That's the key to the whole thing. And people just can't see the forest for the trees. They can't believe that changing reality could be that simple. But it can. The controlling hand really isn't as powerful as we think they are. They've just projected that image of power. And when you project an image of power to people, people give you that power. And that's what we've done. But there's more of us than there is of them. And I think that we actually have the power if we choose to use it and choose to unite.
Oh, sure. I tell everyone, get out a sheet of paper and a pencil. Write down the name of every corporation that you patronize, including your utilities companies and cell phone company, cable company, all that. Even the name of the conglomerate that owns the apartment building that you live in. Or if it's a corporation that owns the house that you're renting, the bank. And ask yourself if you genuinely believe in the morals, ethics, and values of that corporation. And if you don't, redirect your money to another source that will give you something comparable, if not the same, that you were getting from the other retail outlet. But make sure that that money goes to a place that you do agree with their morals, ethics, and values, like your neighbor who owns the hardware store. Quit going to Lowe's. Go to your neighbor, and it just this simple non-compliance with the system is terribly difficult, like you said, for people to understand that it is just that simple. You can just say no and just do something else.
Well, you can, and the problem is that people attempt to do it on their own and they get squashed and they get chewed up and eaten up and spat out by the system. What we've got to do is build these bonds between each other in our community. And like you say, shopping locally is a great thing to do, sure. But even little things, like if you start a cooperative, some sort of cooperative in your neighborhood, grow vegetables. We'll grow all peas in our yard. You can grow all lettuces in yours, and the neighbor will grow all pumpkins, and the next guy will grow potatoes, and the next guy will grow spinach, and we'll all swap with each other and trade with each other. And we want to do this. If there's council regulations in place that say we can't, well, we need the council to remember that they're our employees. If they're enacting legislation that tells us we can't do something that's bettering our community, we want to know why. And if you're just writing this stuff down on pieces of paper and calling it law, and you're using that so-called law to repress us from doing what we're doing, well, we want to know why. Make noise about this stuff. Question authority at every single opportunity that you can. Any time the council even sends you a fine or a bill or rates or anything, ask them why you have to pay it. Even if you do end up eventually paying it, ask them why. Ask why you have to do anything they ask you to do. Question authority at every single turn and create initiatives in your community, something that's going to bring your community together. Maybe you're in a area where there's a lot of stay-at-home mums or something. Start a sewing group or something. Anything that you think may break down the barriers with your neighbors. Bake an extra cake. If you're baking cakes, you're baking bread one day, bake some extra ones and give them to your neighbors. If you're growing vegetables, grow some extra ones, give them to your neighbors. If you're planting flowers, pick some extra ones and give them to your neighbors. Just break down these barriers with people. Start a gift culture in the community around you. Eventually it'll rub off. And you can start using this gift culture to start disseminating information gently with people. Just help people understand that, reality could be very different to what it is. Find whatever it is in your community that will empower them and start there. And this could be tailored for each individual community because, all communities are different. All communities have different needs. People have different tastes in different communities. Very often these people, conglomerate together within communities that all have a different, they all have a similar aspect on life. So get involved with these people. Find out whatever it is that breaks down the barriers between you and your neighbors and start there. Because we can turn this world into something else, but it's got to start at a grassroots level. And push the envelope. As soon as you've got a united community, you've got people respecting each other and giving vegetables and cakes and food to each other and helping each other out, and start just doing things in your community. Come to your council and say, hey, we're going to do this. We want to put a park here, or we want to do this. And don't ask the council. Tell them this is what you want to do. If they're not going to do it, well, hang on, we'll vote you out. We'll get someone else in that's going to do it because this is what we want. This is what our community wants. And if you're preventing us from doing what we want, well, who do you think you are? You know, start pushing the envelope with these people on a grassroots level, on a community level, all local councils, or anybody of authority. Go up the food chain and just start pushing the envelope with these people. Because a lot of the stuff they're doing is because they're running scared. The people at the top are really, really running scared because people are waking up and they're stumbling and they're making mistakes, which is what's causing more and more people to wake up. You know, but it's an interesting dichotomy because each aspect of this situation is producing its opposite, you know, like we're waking up because this police state is being built around us, and the police state is being built and being escalated around us because people are waking up. So the more we speak out about it and the more on the money we get, the more the control grid is ramped up, you know. Because people are just talking about it, they're not acting, they're not putting it into practice in their communities. They're letting the powers that be know that we know about them. And more people are waking up to the fact that this reality exists and this control mechanism exists. But people aren't putting it into practice. They're waiting for one of the so-called leaders of the alternate research community to put it in practice for them so they can follow that person. And it's not about following. There can't be any leaders. People write to me and ask me, would I like to be their spokesperson? And I say, I can't. I can only speak for me. I cannot speak for you. And if you put me up on a pedestal and want me to lead you, then suddenly the whole movement becomes vulnerable because there's someone to take down. It's up to you leading yourself. If each person can create empowerment in their own reality, in their own community, and start respecting themselves and the people around them, we can create ripples that will eventually join. You know, what we're facing here at this time in history is an idea whose time has come, and there can be no leaders in this movement. No one can save anybody else. It isn't up to you following someone once they've acted. It's up to each individual acting on their own and doing this together, because we can do this. And the only way we're ever really going to combat this system is to step above it, to realize it's fiction. There's no remedy within the parameters of this system. We can't look for legal remedy. We can't take these people to court. They wrote all the rules. We can't start a political party. We're entering into that system. The system wrote the rules to protect itself. It didn't write rules and legal legislation to grant us remedy. It wrote all this stuff to protect itself. That's what it's for. And you can't even blame all the people who work within it, because they're trained that efficiency is success. You get good at something, you go and get a job in a company, you make that company more efficient, and you're a successful person. You'll get elevated to positions of power. The more power you get, because you've had your power taken away from you just by this whole reality and this whole social system, your whole consciousness has been squashed, we can start giving you little bits of power up the food chain, and you'll eventually get as sociopathic as everybody else and start exploiting the people beneath you. Many people do. Maybe not everybody, but many people do. It's a natural human trait, because that's what people do once you remove their power. So they go into the system, they make the system more efficient. So the system becomes more efficient by discarding more and more people. And the system, it's a self-perpetuating organism. Once you put it in place, you inject the cash into it that it needs to function, and the glue that holds it together, you just sit outside of it and you watch it turn itself into the global prison that it's destined to become, while all wealth gets transferred into the hands of those who wish in the currency. That's what we've got here. We can step above it by just realizing it's there. And that's been my message right from the beginning, you know. We can't fight against it. We're fighting against the cloud. We can't be angry with the people who work within it because they're trained to do so. They believe success is efficiency, and within the commercial model, they're right, it is, you know. But I think there's a better way. I think there's a better way. And that's what this time is, Suzanne. I think we're waking up to that.
Max.
But, yeah, it's hard. It's hard for people to see.
Max, let me...
All I have to do is step above
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Let's go off to a break for a second, and then we'll come back and talk about this more, because absolutely, that is the very simplistic answer that we we need to follow. We need to follow the personal responsibility, doing what you feel is right. We're going to head off to a break, and we'll pick this up on the other side. This is Hardline with Suzanne Posel. I'm speaking with Max Egan, and his website is thecrowhouse.com. Don't go away. His website again, thecrowhouse.com. Max, everything that you were saying before the break is an ideology that I've adopted for myself, and I realize that it does ripple out. It's not as quick as the, oh, let's grab our guns and go storm the White House, but I see that answer being perpetrated in alternative media, and it frightens me because I know that if we just stop complying with the system, if everyone got their money out of the banks and stopped patronizing the big box stores and the multinational corporations and started growing gardens and started digging wells and get themselves, you know, off the grid as much as possible, it would all come crashing down, except there is this huge movement in alternative circles to push for an armed revolt. And what are your thoughts on that?
Look, we've had revolutions in the past, and they've never really got us anywhere. You know, I can see that there might be occasions to resort to violence, you know, especially in America. I can see that it may come to that. But the people need to be careful that they're not just going to put a new set of parents in place that are going to do the same thing. And ultimately, attempting an armed rebellion against this system will just cause it to turn into a police state, especially in America. I mean, they've got all the weapons. They've basically militarized the police in the United States, ready for a huge revolt because they know that's where it's heading. And there is a possibility you could have an armed revolution and you could win and you could put together a new government, and you could actually reinstate the republic. There is an opportunity that you could do that. There's a possibility that it could actually work, but there's a better way. The best way, really, is as I said, to simply put down everything and respect each other, because the system's fiction. You don't have to fight it. All you have to do is realize what it is and step above it. And the problem that we face, really, in our all of our countries, really, and it's unfortunate to say it, but the biggest problem we face, the biggest threat the American people face is the American police, because these people are simply not smart enough to see through the haze, to see through the fiction. They're indoctrinated into believing the system's real, and they're in a big boys club where they can basically do anything they want. They can be as brutish as they want. And if you defend yourself against them, it's assaulting a police officer, it's resisting arrest. You know, they've got the monopoly on violence, and they can use as much violence as they want. And you get young kids that are growing up in these broken homes and broken families, bullied at school, they've got a chip on their shoulder, and they're perfect inductees into the police force because they grow up with the chip on their shoulder. They don't like society. They want to inflict themselves on society. They want to throw their weight around, and they do. And that's unfortunately the buffer zone that protects the government and protects the system. Even if you want to complain about a politician, or you want to, you know, you can't obviously go to the newspapers anymore and blow the whistle on them the way you used to. If you wanted to complain about a politician, you could just ring up the local reporter and they'd put it in the paper, and there'd be this huge controversy, and it'd be on TV, and there'd be an investigation, and this person would get thrown out. You can't do that anymore. The media won't print it. So what do when you want to complain about a politician? We can't go to the media. What do? You go to the police. The police won't question authority. They won't question anyone above themselves. You know, if the police are handed legislation which is completely corrupt, completely irrelevant, tells you that you can't step on some certain part of the park or something, you can't walk on the grass, and you do so, they'll fine you. You can say, well, hang on, I'm not doing anything wrong. So it doesn't matter. It says here on the piece of paper that you can't do this, and they won't question that. They're not smart enough to question that. So that's the line of defense. That's the buffer zone. That's who we have to deal with if we want to combat this system. So it's impossible. It's impossible to do it within legal parameters. And if we have an armed revolution, These people believe that this system's real. They believe the government's right, and they'll do anything they can to defend against the United States, to defend the Constitution of the United States, to defend the government of the United States. They believe that the founding fathers of the United States were terrorists. They're told that at their local at their morning talks and stuff, at the police training. They're told that if these guys were in the country today, we would have viewed them as terrorists. They were up at arms against the government. They were doing all the wrong things. Sure, they founded this country, but we can't have this sort of stuff happening today.
Well, do you think that
they
are?
That's the way they're trying to think.
Do you think that they're trying to create a scenario for a civil war by separating? You know, they separated the states. They separated people by ideology. You know, during the Civil War. Now, it seems that there is a palatable division between people who have woken up and people who have not. Do you think that that might be something that they're brewing?
Oh, they'd love a civil war. They'd absolutely love a civil war because they've got all the FEMA camps in place. They've got all the militarized police. They've got all the advanced weaponry. They've got laser cannons. They've got sound cannons. They've got microwave cannons. They've got all sorts of stuff they can use against the people. You know, crowd control they used in Iraq where they went and tested all this stuff. All the police have got all this stuff now. The police have got M16s in their boots. I mean, they're all fully militarized, and they would love a revolution because a revolution will give them the opportunity to consolidate their power, and that's what they want to do. And it may come to that, but I just think there's a better way. Noncompliance to the system could change it in a day. You know, even if the whole country, you imagine if your whole community just said no, what are they going to do? If you're in a county there and you all say no to whatever the mayor says, well, what can the mayor do? Get the 15 or 20 police in the county there to come and suppress you? Well, they have to get police from all over the other counties to come because there won't be enough there to suppress that amount of people. And then if that happens, then all the people in the neighboring counties are going to know what's going on. You can unite the community in this way. You can do it peacefully just by respect for each other. You really can. I really believe we can. And if people do respect each other, and they stand up and say no, then the system will collapse. It will have no choice but to collapse because the system only exists on paper. It's a fiction. If you pick up a gun and you go fighting against it, you've given it teeth. You're just shooting against some guy who doesn't know any better because he's trained to think the system's real, and he's suppressed and he's kept in this emotionally retarded state as well, so he needs a release valve, and you'd be a perfect release valve for him. And he's got all this peer group pressure, all these cops in the same uniform as him. There's this whole energetic thing going on. And they'll get out there and they'll inflict themselves upon the people. And then the people will lock up and they'll all this relief valve thing will go on and everyone will just clash and it'll just turn into chaos. And at the end of it, you'll have a military dictatorship. That's what you'll have in America if it goes to armed revolution. Even if the patriots, in inverted commas, win out, even if the militias win out, what are they going to do? They're going to get into this system. Most of them think money's real. They're going to still set up some new hierarchy, some new system that'll be run by through the violence, through the use of guns and weapons, you know. New government now, don't question your new government. This is, you know, martial law for now. Whoever gets in place after the revolution, there'll be martial law. It'll be a military dictatorship, no matter who is in power. This is why, look at every country that has an armed revolution. You end up with the military in control. That's what happens. And then eventually they juggle it around for a while, then some other UN puppet is put in place. Because if a UN puppet isn't put in place, they do something like inject polio into the population, you know. So where are you going to go from here? You know, all you got to do is wake up to yourself. All everybody has to do is wake up to themselves, start respecting the people around them, and the world changes in one day. You don't want to do that? Well, go down the path of armed violence and armed revolution if that's what you want, if you think it's going to change anything. But if you look at history, we've had violent revolutions countless times in the past, and all of them have brought us to exactly where we are today. And this is not a good place to be. And this is the first time in human history that the actual workings of the mechanism have been laid bare for all to see. I think it's a golden opportunity for us to see how this system works and to use it to step into our power. The world has been made smaller through the internet. We can connect all countries together and all peoples together, and there are far more people awake to this system than what many would believe. It's just that many of them can't see a way out because they don't know how to unite on an energetic level with the people around them. But we can do it. I really think we can. It's going to get worse yet because there's still a lot of people asleep, and it needs to get worse for these people to wake up. And so I say bring it on. Make it worse because you're not going to control us. You're not going to stop us. We are going to wake up as a whole, and we are going to take this species in a new direction. And the more you ramp it up, the more totalitarian you make it, the more people wake up. Now, I was in a local butcher store the other day, walking past a butcher store, and I heard a lady talking to the man behind the counter about the global situation and the laws that the government's putting in place. I was walking through a mall, you know, and there's one of those open butcher stores there, and there's the lady at the counter talking to the butcher about the global situation. This is a middle-aged woman in a middle-class area on the Gold Coast in Queensland. So people are waking up. These are people you wouldn't expect to be talking about this sort of stuff, you know. People are waking up in droves all around the planet, and it doesn't matter what they do, we will get through this. We just got to choose what the methodology is going to be. And, you know, I think we've tried violence, and it hasn't worked. Of course, there may be need for people to defend themselves. I'm certainly not advocating pacifism. You know, if you need to defend yourself, you absolutely should do so. But I don't think a violent overthrow of government will solve anything. I think what we need to realize is that government is fiction. You can't overthrow a cloud. You just have to realize it's a cloud and just blow it away. Turn away from it. Do something else.
Sure. Yeah, I saw recently Dick Cheney came out and said that the Tea Party is an uprising, but it's a good thing because the Republican Party needs to learn how to be more radical. And I see the demonization of what started out as a grassroots effort, ended up being co-opted, but what isn't. And the people who still actually believe in what they started are being pushed into this corner where they need to radicalize. They need to prove that they are patriots by grabbing guns and going and storming the gates up in Pennsylvania Avenue and removing everyone on Capitol Hill with citizens arrest and just, you know, this whole shootout that needs to happen at the OK Corral that I just really don't see the point in. I understand that the more they ramp it up, the more we wake up, the more they ramp it up, that it's cyclical. But I see an acceleration, a manufactured acceleration that is just kind of feeding off of the feelings of the people in the audience, rather, in alternative media who are listening. And we're going to head up on a break in about 15 seconds. But the people who are listening, the audience, are the target, it seems, by people who want to have a violent revolution in any way possible. Piss off whoever they can, just as long as they grab their guns. You're listening to Hardline with Suzanne Posel. I'm speaking with Max Egan, and we will be right back. Egan. His website is thecrowhouse.com. This is the final segment, Max. And so what are your thoughts about this? Do you think that there's more of a push for the audience to go for the violent revolution card as opposed to, oh, it's just so mamsy-pamsy if you just stop complying?
Yeah, absolutely. They want violent revolution. That's why they push it so hard. This will give them the opportunity to do you know, bring in the police state, lock down the system the way they need to. The government's threatened, introduce martial law. Everything's in place to do it. Now, if the United States is going to have a violent revolution, then they sure as hell better make sure it's well coordinated. You need to have the whole country know this is happening and everybody stand up all at the same time. You can't just start little pockets of resistance because these will be vilified by the media, painted as terrorist cells the way the media does it, you know. So I can't see possibly how it would work. You know, you're fighting a cloud. You're giving them the excuse they need to lock the system down. But I think what's going to happen is if they do introduce a global currency, if they start moving towards that and start phasing the United States dollar out as the global reserve currency, it's going to basically implode the United States, which is what they want to do with it. They want to get rid of it. They don't want it there in its current form. It served its purpose. It was there to promote the concept of freedom so that it would attract some of the best minds in the world, so that these minds could be used to create the military machine that it now is, so that all this power could be transferred to the United Nations. And that's what it's doing. Now they don't need it. They need to implode it. And a lot of people aren't going to be happy when that happens, and there's a lot of guns in the United States. So that's why they've got all the FEMA camps. They've got everything ready, because they know when no matter how much we talk about there is no need to do this, it's going to erupt into that once the whole economy implodes, which it will do, as you say, by 2019. Rothschilds have said global currency within 5 years. There's all of these things put in place to have all of these reserves in place in 2019 to prepare for this change. So that's basically when they're expecting it to happen. But too many people are waiting for this big cataclysm. They're waiting for all this stuff. They're not seeing what's happening around them. They're moving into fear. Even saying that, people will be looking at that and saying, oh my God, I've got to prepare for that. Well, no, you could fix it right now by simply respecting yourself and respecting your neighbors, by disseminating information to the people around you, by questioning authority on every occasion that you can, and not complying with anything that interferes with your moral compass. And that's what you need to do. Everybody in every country needs to do this and be respectful. Don't go up there with a pitchfork and go against the government building. Just stand there and ask why. Why do you think you have a right of ownership over me? Who are you people? We employ you to do a job which is vastly different to the one that you're doing. And I'm standing here with the entire crowd of community behind me, and we're simply asking you who the hell do you think you are? We're not doing this anymore. We're going to go in a different direction, regardless of what legislation you put on pieces of paper. If you put legislation on pieces of paper which prevent us from doing what we're doing right now, we put it to you that you're in breach of trust, and we require you to show cause, or you should not be held in breach of trust for abusing the power that we granted to you. We don't wish you any harm, but we're not going to allow the world to continue on in the direction that it's going, because we know we have the power to change it anytime we want, and we've decided to do so. Now, what are they going to do if you do that? And even if there's police there, if you approach things in this way, if these police are members of your community, they're going to hear the sense of what you're saying. If you have a community there, the whole community that is all united in respect for each other, we could simply do this and we could change the world in a single day. And we can do that now. We don't have to sit cowering in fear, waiting for revolution, waiting for a global financial crash, buying into all the fear porn, buying into all these systems of control, believing we've got to do all this paperwork to try and establish our freedom. All we have to do is claim our freedom by stepping above the fiction, because the whole system's fiction. We made the whole thing up, and we could make up something vastly different if we choose to do so. That's my message. That's been my message since day one. I really think it would be that simple, Suzanne. I think we could change the world in a day if people simply paid attention.
I agree with you. I see how free I feel. I have no debt. Everything I own is mine. I rent the house that I'm living in because I realize that I don't own property. You don't. If you have to pay property taxes, you don't own the property. If you have to ask the city for permission to dig a well, you don't own the property. But I've opted out in so many ways, and homeschooling my children as well, being one of them, I feel so much freer that I am the decider of my destiny. And my children are raised to believe that as well. The fear that I get, the resistance that I hear the most is over financial. Oh, I can't close my bank account. I have online bill pay. The stamps cost 49 cents. My father was telling me this. Oh, stamps, 49 cents. I mean, who can afford that? Really? Unfortunately, in this day and age, the way it's set up, okay, a 75 cent, money order and a 49 cent stamp is your cost of freedom, but you're free after that. They don't have your money. You do. Even if they devalue it, it's still in your hand. It's not on a computer screen, so you have it. You know, that sense of you have what you have, that people don't even want that anymore.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're trained not to. They're trained to be dependent upon the systems. The corporate model, like I said, it's the glue that holds it all together. It's a very, very difficult program for people to break out of. You know, I can't afford to do this. I can't afford to do that. You know, when you worry about money, you attract scarcity into your life. You know, reality mirrors things back to you. And they keep you in scarcity so that you're always worried, so that reality mirrors a worried reality back to you. I don't have much money at all. I live a very, very meager existence, but I never worry about money. I never concern myself with being short of money. I never think about money at all. Money will work. If I need it, it'll come. You know, I just don't think about it. I don't put myself in that energy. I don't buy into the fear. I don't buy into the stress. I see this whole time as a huge opportunity and a huge gift to mankind in many ways. It's the first time we've ever had, the first opportunity we've ever had for freedom, real freedom. We've tried in the past, but we've never really had everything here laid so bare for us. And I just don't worry about any of it. I'm only here for a little while. This is a temporary existence. I don't own anything that I have here around me. I don't own any land. I don't own any of my possessions. I don't even own my body. I'm just here enjoying the experience. And I'm here to do the best with the time that I've got. And that's, I believe, what it's all about. People should stop stressing on money. They should start giving to the people around them. You know, if you give more than you receive from people, if you try to give more than what you receive from everybody, then, you know, if everybody did that, imagine if you give, you know, more than you receive, give 5%, 10%, 20% more than what is given to you every day, then the whole world would be in abundance. But I just give unconditionally. I give and I don't expect anything back. And I find that because I do that, because I don't place value on money, I place value on life. I see wealth as being life, wealth as being my connection to the people around me, wealth being the value of my relationships with the people I know and the reality that I live in my environment. To me, that is wealth. And because I live that way, reality just works for me. So I think people should get over the money hump. They really should. Money prevents us from being in our natural state of abundance, and it negates our natural tendency to want to give to people. Suddenly we can't because everything has a value. And if we give, we may be in a state of shortage. So it prevents us from being able to express the art of our lives. That's what it's for.
Sure. And then when you go to the grocery store, they ask you for a dollar for this fund and a dollar for this charity. And so it gives you the sense that you are contributing to your community. You don't know. You've never heard of it. Or maybe you have, but you pay it no mind. You don't think about the fact that they're not curing cancer, but they've been collecting millions and millions of dollars, the community isn't any better, and yet you drop money into there. The children's funds don't make kids any better, but you still drop the money into it, and it gives you this false sense. It's like voting. You know, you get this false sense that you're participating in this something that you don't realize is your own tyranny.
Well, yeah, and really you're just participating in the commercial model. It's the commercial model itself which has placed these people in a state of scarcity. You know? It's what's used to marginalize countries and create the third world. The third world is a complete creation of the first world. The third world is a natural byproduct of creating the first world, because that's how we created the first world, was we exploited the third world by going in there and enslaving them to commerce, superimposing that over their minds, so suddenly they were placed in a state of scarcity. They had to use paper and pieces of metal to have access to the abundance all around them. They didn't have enough paper or metal, so they had to tear their country apart and give it all to us, because we enslaved them to that system. We enslaved them to that mentality. It's a spell, and it's not reality. And it's the glue that's been used to hold the whole thing together. And it's really difficult. It's a hard thing to bring to people, because you start saying, look, we need a world without money, and they start calling you a socialist or this or that. They've got to put an ism to it. You know, it's got to be some political movement. They can't realize that money is a fiction. It's a cabalistic spell that's been superimposed over the mind of mankind, and it's the cause of every single problem, every single piece of pollution, every state of homelessness, shortage, scarcity, everything. Every crime that's ever been committed, apart from crimes of passion, have been created due to the imposition of commerce over the human mind.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I do what I do, and that's why you do what you do, because we recognized the money was what woke me up. You know, when I realized that it was fake, I said, oh, dear Lord, what else is fake? And all of a sudden, it seemed everything was fake. And I'm glad that you are doing what you do, because it's absolutely necessary that individual people are just living the life, walking the walk, and just asking that people just take a look and see if this would be a better way, and giving them an option instead of these false choices or rather the other way around, giving people choices instead of the options that they're served. Choose left or right, choose blue or red, you know, choose citizenry in one country or another, be loyal to this group or that group. Thank you so much for everything that you do. It's very integral to any kind of positive change that happens in this world, because right now, like we've been talking about, it seems like it has to get worse before it gets better. And we have to ride that roller coaster, and that's fine. I can accept that. But knowing that there are actually people out there that are working hard to make sure that the fallout after that whole collapse happens is not as terrible as it needs to be is a great thing. And I'm very grateful that you are doing that. Thank you.
My pleasure. I mean, I think that's what I'm here to do. I just hope that people realize that there is empowerment in all of this. I mean, sure, we do have reason to be concerned over the global situation, but there is a way out. And it's good not to move into fear. Really, I just ask people to step back and really look at the situation and consider the power that they actually have. Consider what this system is. It's all fiction. It only exists on paper. And through mutual respect, we could negate the whole thing. We could step above the whole thing. And that's what we have to do, I believe. And that's what we've got the opportunity to do at this time in history.
Thank you.
So, yeah, thanks for having me on to talk about it.
Yes, thank you so much, Max. Everyone, you've been listening to Hardline. I'm Suzanne Posel. I've been speaking with Max Egan, and his website is thecrowhouse.com. The name of your show?
My show is called Surviving the Matrix. It's starting on David Icke's channel in mid-November, and it's also going to be aired as a podcast on American Voice Radio the way it has been since 2008, and will always be posted to the Crow House and my YouTube channel.
That's wonderful. So the David Icke endeavor is the people's voice, correct?
That's the one, yeah. David contacted me and asked me if I wanted to do a show on it, and I thought, well, why not reach a wider platform? So absolutely. So, yeah, I'm heavily involved in that at the moment. We're just involved in producing my own show. I'm not involved in the station or with the other projects David's got on the boiler, but just using that platform, it's good that he's putting it together.
Oh, it is.
More platforms, the better, I think.
Yes, replace the mainstream. It's done. You know, I expose their lies every single day. I realize that it's done, and we need to have media houses. There are a lot of people who are putting together media houses, and I think that that's very important to give people a multimedia opportunity to learn something instead of just be scared, and give them more reasons to not leave their house. folks, this is Hardline with Suzanne Posel, and I've been speaking with Max Egan, and join us again next week. Thank you, Max, and we'll see you guys later.